Hello again, this is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And I'm in a different place tonight, which people shouldn't be surprised at because I travel so much. Tonight I am giving a class for this whole weekend, so I'm in a hotel in another city, so we had to forward it over here. So I don't have any guests tonight, because I knew I would be traveling, and I do have the class. And I usually give this weekend class for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And this is the class where I teach my technique, the hypnosis technique that I am perfecting myself. This will be the sixth class that I've given this year. I believe I told you about the ones I just came back from when I did a class in North Carolina and I did a class in San Jose, California. But before that, I did a class in Moscow with a translator and then one in Amsterdam. So it's being held all over the world. And this class today is in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is in my own backyard. Which I like that better, then I don't have to go away from home. At least I don't have to get on a plane again, which is one of the main things, because if you're traveling a lot, you do like to stay home once in a while. But I started these classes. I began 5 years ago. I said you have to be a certified hypnotist to take the class with at least 1 year working with people, because I thought that would be the best thing to do. Then the people would understand the basics of hypnosis and be able to understand more what I do. But then I began to find out something different was happening, because all due respect to hypnotists, because I've been there, done that, a lot of the people who were taking the class who had a strong background of many years in hypnosis were not really willing to change their technique, because this is the way they were taught and it was the way they were practicing. So I guess if it was working for them, that was fine. They should stay where they are. And other ones were attempting to combine my technique with theirs. But I always tell them when they take the class that forget everything you've been taught and we're going to start with something totally new. But my technique is totally different. But then I began having people coming to me in all parts of the world when I was going to do a class, begging me. They said, please let me take the class. I wanted so bad, because they had a passion for it and they wanted to learn how to do it, that this was something very important to them and they thought this may be the thing they were supposed to be doing for the rest of their life. And so I said, well, you could take it, but I don't know if you'll understand it. I don't know if you'll be able to make it work. But I found out since then, these people are having the best results. They're having phenomenal results. Because even when I was in Dubai, this one man begged to be in the class, and I said, all right, we'll see. I don't have no guarantee if you'll understand it or not. And even during the class, when at the beginning of the class, I always ask people to introduce themselves and tell me something about themselves. He said, well, I'm the baby of the class because I don't have any experience at all. But then after the class, within a month or so, he emailed me again and said he had already done 20 cases and the technique was working perfectly and phenomenally. And in one case, he had cured a woman of stroke cancer. And I've had the same thing happen. People have called me just from the last class I did in North Carolina, and they're also having results. So it is working. But maybe it has something to do with starting out fresh with no background in hypnosis to confuse the issue. Nobody that says, this is the way you have to do it, you cannot do it any other way, you must follow the rules and go just exactly the way you're taught. See, that's part of it, that you don't have that kind of a background. Maybe you're more open to trying new things and attempting to adapt what I'm trying to tell people how to do, and they don't have anything else to base it on, so they follow the instructions, and they are having very good results. So people have asked me about that. They said, you mean now you're just opening up to anybody? I said, well, those that have a passion, they want to help people. Some of them are healers, energy healers, Reiki workers, acupuncturists, people that are into healing and helping people. If this is your desire, then I'm allowing them into the class. And some of them have said, well, you might just have just anybody come in. And maybe they might take this information and this technique and try to use it in the wrong way. Try to use it for negative purposes. I don't think that will happen. I think if you tried to use it for the wrong purpose, for negative purposes, it just wouldn't work. It would backfire. And you would not be able to contact them, especially the ones I call them, the subconscious mind. I don't see how you could do it, because they're not going to work with anyone who is using these methods in a negative way. So I'm not too worried about it. If they are taking the class for the wrong reason, I don't think that they will understand it. I don't think they will be able to use it. If they try, I don't think it will work. So I'm just trusting in them to know which is the right way. And I'm allowing people to take it if they really are serious about wanting to learn how to heal and how to help people with this method of hypnosis. So if there's anyone out there who is interested in these classes, you can call my 800 number or email me and ask about the next one and see if we can work you into the class. I keep the classes small, and I do that on purpose, because I want there to be interaction among the people and to feel free to ask me questions. So I deliberately keep the classes small, but the no more than 20 anyway. So the 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. And my website, I guess you would want my email if you were going to email us about doing a session with me or these classes. The email is becannon, becannon, at msn.com. becannon at msn.com. I, so far, I don't know what my schedule is going to be next year. We are just now beginning to put these things together, and we're already scheduling out-of-the-country trips for next year. So I'm not sure exactly where the classes will be. The only one so far is I know I'm going to have one in Montreal in Canada, but the dates and everything have not been firmed up yet. And I'll probably be having some more classes overseas. There will be some more in the States, but we just don't have the dates yet. But if you're interested, we can get you on the list and you'll be notified where I'm going to be. And hopefully it may even be in your own vicinity. So we'll just see. I just wanted to bring that up anyway. So this was the last class this year. And from here on, I'm going to do two conferences in October. And the rest of the year will just be private sessions. Then I'm going to have time to work on my new book, The Convoluted Universe, Book 3. Which everybody is sending me emails begging me, when is that book going to come out? So the winter is usually when I have time to work on it, because I don't travel and I can stay home and devote my time. Usually I get snowed in, so I have plenty of time to put the book together. So that's what I'll be focusing on this winter, after I do the two conferences in October. In October, I will speak in Pensacola, Florida, and also in Chicago. Those are the only two for the end of the year. The dates and everything are on my website, www.ozarkmountains.com. and that is ozarkmt.com. So if there's anything about the appearances that I'll be making in different places. Okay. I don't have a guest tonight, so I did say 2 weeks ago when my guest canceled, I began talking about the Nostradamus material. And I did say at that time, the next time I don't have a guest, I will continue where I left off. Now I gotta remember where did I leave off. But I knew the Nostradamus material was so much there that I would not be able to do it in just one show. So I began on it, and I knew I would continue. I'm trying to remember, where did I stop? Okay. The Nostradamus material, it took 3 books to tell the entire story. So you can see there's a great deal of information. The books are called Conversations with Nostradamus, and it's 3 volumes, books 1, 2, and 3. And during those 3 books, we have been successful in interpreting all the 1,000 quatrains or prophecies of Nostradamus. This has never been done before. The first time ever in history they've all been interpreted. All of the other books out there about Nostradamus, where they say they've been interpreted, they are mostly just telling you what the words mean, what the names of the countries, what he's referring to in the quatrain of the prophecy, but they don't tell you what the prophecy is or what it refers to. Many people don't understand these until after they have occurred. But we were able to do it all back in the 1980s, when our first book came out in 1989. They've been reprinted at much as 6 times now, and they're translated in languages all over the world. I'm very glad that they came out in 1989, the first book did, because the events began happening soon after that, the events that were predicted in the book. And everybody can say, well, you can say anything after the fact if I come up with these things after the book, after the book was out for a while, and they say, oh yeah, you could say anything then. But the book was in print long before the events began to happen. And there are even people now who say, look at the copyright date. The events are happening now. So these events were predicted as far back as 1989. So that's why I'm glad they were in print before that time, because it's been remarkable. The books have been out so long that in the 1990s, I wrote an addendum, and I put it in the back of Volume 1, and I put in there all of the events that have come true since the publishing of the book, and it's about a 50-page addendum. Every time I have gone into reprint, I've tried to add to that and talk about more events that have happened. It's impossible to keep this current because you don't reprint that often. But we've tried to put some of the updates on our website. But here again, with me traveling so much, I haven't been able to keep that up to date. But it is quite remarkable to know we are in the middle of all of the things that he predicted. And one of the reasons they are so accurate is because all the other people who are trying to interpret the quatrains, the prophecies, are doing it with their own mind, their own intellect, which I admire, because we're working here with puzzles that are 400 years old, that are so convoluted and complicated, it's very hard to understand what he's trying to say. I had one man write me right after the book first came out, and he said he spent 4 years working on one quatrain. So I respect those people who use their own intellect trying to figure out what the puzzles are. And as I said when I spoke on this before, when this all began, I didn't even know what a quatrain was. There's 1,000 of these that Nostradamus wrote. A quatrain is a 4-line poem In the case of Nostradamus, it's a four-line puzzle of prophecy. And he wrote almost 1,000 that have come down to our time. We found out since then that he actually wrote many more that were destroyed, or they were contaminated by mixing them together. So a lot of them have not made it down to our time. So there were actually more than the 1,000. But that's a great deal of information. And many of them, a great number of them, have never been understood. And other ones have understood after they occurred. And of course, when we were communicating with him and doing the sessions, he kept saying, "This is so simple. Why don't you understand it? I was not complicated." He gives us more credit than we are worth, because his mind is remarkable, the way he has put these together, the codes he has used. And that's why it took me 3 years to do all of them. And those were not 3 years of continuous work, because there were breaks in between as the people came and went during the entire experience. Because it was not constant work, but working with the different people that were involved, it took 3 years, and it ended up that he came through about 12 different people before we were finally finished. But through all of these people, he gave us the same story, the same scenario, the same visions of our future that he wanted us to know. It was always the same scenarios. Even though the people I worked with did not know what I was working on, they did not know the information I'd already uncovered. They just gave more pieces of the puzzle as we translated and interpreted the different quatrains. It was my job, as I wrote the book, to put it all together. It ended up taking this computer to put it together because there's so much information. And I had to try to arrange it in some kind of a chronological order, because I found, when I began reading the quatrains to Nostradamus, as he wanted me to do, and he would tell me what they meant, that they were in no particular order. He did this on purpose. He said he did it to further confuse the Inquisition, and he threw dice trying to figure out which order they were going to go in, and which pile. He put them in piles, and then he tried to organize them very randomly, he said, by throwing dice. So, even if I had started at the beginning of the book that is in our hands now, that has come down to our time, the books of all of the quatrains, even if I had begun in the beginning and read them straight through, we wouldn't have got to the right order, because they are not in chronological order. They are all mixed up. So it ended up taking the computer, and I tried to put everything together, which was really a monumental job, and that's why it took so long. The first book came out in 1989, and the second one, I believe, was the year later. And then it was a few years after that before it came out with Volume 3. Now, the last time we spoke, I talked about how the extraordinary, unbelievable contact took place with Nostradamus when I was working with the young girl. Well, not young girl, she's a woman, she had 10 children. But when I was working with her, and she went back to a lifetime where she was a student of Nostradamus, in the 1500s. And that was when I didn't know, I knew who he was, and I knew something about the quatrains, but I'd never read any of them. But I didn't know anything about his life. And later when I did the research, I found that he did have students. But there's only a very few mentioned in his biography, mostly the one who was with him during the last years of his life and when he died. A lot of these scholars have tried to say that was the only student he had. That's not true. I found out more about his life than the scholars know. He had many students that he taught, and they had to meet in secret. because if they each physician would have found out what they were doing, they would have been killed, or their land would have been taken away, and they would have been thrown into prison. They had to be extremely careful, because this was considered working with the devil. Nostradamus was a doctor, so he had these people meet with him in secret, under the disguise of just teaching them medicine. He couldn't let anyone know he was actually teaching them metaphysical things. He was teaching them how to see the future, how to go into trance and see the future, and also how to, some of the ways he was doing his medical cures. Because there were many spies in those days wanting to know how he was able to do these miraculous healings that he did in his lifetime. Anything he was doing was totally against what they had been taught in medicine in those days. And they wanted to find out how he was doing this. So they said he had to be working with the devil. Now I know from my work where he got the information he used to heal people in those days. A lot of it came from seeing the visions of the future. But he was able to see some of the healings we have now and use some of the cures to apply to his time period. And during the session, even the sessions we had, sometimes he would ask me to give a cure for a certain problem. He says, how would you do this in your time? Well, I didn't know how to do it, but the answer would always come. As I always said, I think it comes from them. Because when we were doing this, we had a person involved who was called the guardian. And he was the guardian of the tapestry room to allow us to do this. Because he said, what you are doing by traveling through time and entering into another person's life while they are alive is totally against the rules, against the laws of the universe. But we know your purpose, so we're allowing you to do this. So when we entered into his life, we were allowed to have the information. And if Nostradamus needed medical information, it would come. It would be supplied to him. So this is why I think he was able to get a lot of his information for medical purposes by seeing these things in the future. And also he said one of the ways he could stop pain and stop bleeding was a highly advanced form of hypnosis that he had developed himself. But these were things that the average person was not to know because they considered it working with the devil. But anyway, this woman went back to where she was a student of his during that time period, and that's how the entire adventure began. And I told you last time about how she came to a point in her life where she moved away because this was all too much for her. When we had the contact with Nostradamus, and he said he had an assignment for me. He said, I want you to find the book. He could see there was a book that had come down to our time period that had all of the prophecies in it. And he wanted me to find the book and to read them to him, the quatrains one by one, and he would explain them in modern day language, tell me what they meant, what the prophecy concerned, and what time period was involved. And he wanted me to put this information to the world. And this was the assignment he was giving me. Well, when the woman woke up and we told her all of this, she was so upset by it that she moved to Alaska. And she had been from Alaska, but I think she wanted to get back. She wanted to put as much distance between me and her as she could after this came out, because she did not want to do any part in it. So she moved to Alaska. I'm repeating a little bit from the last time we spoke, because I want to backtrack for those who have not heard that at a part, or to catch up on where I was, anyway. But before she left, we had time for one more session, and it happened again, and he came to again, and he said, you must do this work. It is urgent, it is imperative to your time period that these prophecies be translated and brought forth into your time, because the time is now when these things are going to happen. And he said nobody has understood and nobody has had the correct translation. So I told him, yes, it's all very well and good, but this person is moving away. I can't work with her anymore. And he said, that doesn't matter. Now that we have made this contact, I will come to anybody you work with. That's a big statement because I work with a lot of people. And he gave me instructions on how to locate him and a test or training that I was to use to be sure I was really speaking to him. And then the woman moved away. And after that, I wrote the first four chapters of Conversations with Nostradamus, Volume 1, not knowing if it was going anywhere. It might have just been an interesting incident that would go into a book on miscellaneous regression sometime in the future. Of course, that chapter of whatever I was going to do on miscellaneous regression turned into a three-volume set. So, anyway, this was the instruction to date me. So, not knowing what was going to happen, I just waited about 3 months. Then I tried the experiment on a woman who was a very good subject. And I had worked with experimentation with her for many years. And I believe I told in the last podcast about how we were doing remote viewing before it was even called that. I didn't even know what it was. All I knew was I was able to take people in trance and have them go to other countries and see incidents that were happening at that time and to tell us what was going on. We were able to do this a lot, especially with these subjects. And Brenda, the music student, was one of the ones that I was using in the remote viewing experiment. It was highly effective. She found information, especially about the Chernobyl disaster, that was not known until many years later, whenever the Russians finally released the information that they had, that they've been holding for such a long time, about the degree of radiation and the people that have been killed. A lot of these things were not released at the time, but yet we knew what had happened on that morning when it was going on, because I had taken Brenda to Chernobyl to see and to report back on what was happening. So I knew this was possible to do this, and I knew that she was an excellent subject. So I asked her, went to her house one night, late at night, after the first woman had moved away to Alaska. I went to Brenda's house late at night, and I said, do you want to try an experiment? She said, sure, just tell me what he did when I wake up. So then I followed Nostradamus' instructions to locate him, and it worked. There he was, the same man, in the same room, and he said, well, I've been waiting for you. Now, can we get started? Of course, that night I was completely blown away, not even knowing. I didn't want to follow the translations. I just didn't ask the questions about Nostradamus and his life. It was really one of the greatest adventures I've ever had when we made the contact with him. And I believe when I stopped the broadcast the other night is when Brenda finally had to stop working with me. She'd been working with me for about 6 months, meeting just once a week, and during that time, we had already interpreted about 300 of the quatrains of the prophecy. At the height of my work with her, I would open the book, I would read the prophecy, check it off, and then she would give me the answer immediately. I didn't have to repeat it. I didn't have to ask any more questions. I would just move on to the next one and read it and check it off. Didn't matter where I started because I didn't know what I was doing anyway. Then I found out it didn't matter because they're not in any kind of order. But I would read them and move on to the next one. And at the height of my work with her, we were interpreting 30 quatrains in an hour. That was absolutely impossible for the human mind to think that fast especially on puzzles as complicated as this. We were definitely communicating directly with him. He was giving us the answers because he is the one who wrote the book. So this was going along very well, working with her, and I was getting a great deal of information, and we were able to put all this together. It was only later that I had to use the computer. There's thousands and thousands of hours on tape that had to be transcribed. I had to do all of that and then put it all together later. But then it came to a point where Brenda was just burned out, I think, more than anything. But she had to drop out of college as a music student and take a job because she needed money. The only job she could get was working at night in a chicken factory where we live. Over here is the Tyson territory, and they have these chicken houses at the chicken plant. And it's not a very good job because you're handling the frozen chickens. They go down the assembly lines to be cut up and all of this. And here she was a musician, and she was so concerned about her hands working in the ice and with these cold chickens. And it was very hard work. So I would go to her house expecting to work with her, and she would come home at night, and I'd be there waiting, and she said, all I want to do is to fall into bed. I don't even want to eat anything, but I'm totally exhausted. I hate this job. And she said, I don't think I'll ever be able to do this again, because all she could think of was her work and trying to rest. So that meant that my work with her was finished. And I didn't like it to be that way because there were still many, many of the quatrains that had not been completed. And those of you that know me know that I don't leave anything unfinished. I like to complete a job, especially an assignment, and I wanted to complete this. I wanted to do all of them. And up to that point, I'd only done about 300. All of this went into the volume one of the Conversations with Nostradamus series, is my work with Brenda. Many, many of those quatrains have now come true all over the world, all of the events, and it's quite amazing that people have told me, some of the ones that have come true, they said was the most accurate prediction ever that they've ever heard anywhere. No one could doubt that these were accurate predictions that did come true. Now, the main reason for Nostradamus making this contact in the first place was that he wanted us to change the future. He said, if I tell you the most horrible things you can do to yourself, will you do something to stop it? Because, he said, the future is not set in stone. It is not just one future that's unchangeable. The future is many probabilities and possibilities, and these all branch off in many different directions. So if you knew which one of these paths or direction you were headed down, you could change the direction and go in a different direction. You could lessen the event. If you couldn't stop it, you could at least lessen the effects of the event if you knew which way you were going. That man doesn't know the power of their own mind. And if you focus on the opposite of what you saw, then you could make that your reality. Because everything we have in our life, we create and we sit there. So if we knew what was going to happen, we could change it by focusing on the opposite and creating that reality. But he said, people don't know the power of their own mind. And if one man's mind is that powerful that they can change the events of the future, imagine the power of group's mind. You get several people in groups focusing on the same thing. The power is not only multiplied, it is squared. And the power is tremendous. And that's one of the things he wanted me to do through the books and through the lectures. Because I've now been lecturing on this since about 1991, about 15 years, all over the world. He wanted me to tell people They have the power to change the future. And I tell people when I'm meeting in different lectures in different parts of the world, if you have meditation groups, if you have prayer groups, any kind of a group that meets regularly, if you can only take 5 minutes out of that meeting to focus on peace and harmony, we can create that reality. And I thought it was helping because a lot of the events that he saw, he thought was going to happen by the end of the 90s. And they seemed to have been put off by a few years at least. And they didn't really begin to happen until like the year 2001, 2002. So we were able to forestall it for a few years. But I tell people when they read the book, don't pay any attention to the dates. Dates are the hardest thing for any psychic anywhere to predict. It'll often see the event, but finding the correct date is almost impossible. Nostradamus even said that when he saw an event, imagine him looking into the future. Everything he saw was futuristic, had no relation to his time period whatsoever. So everything he saw was totally out of context from his own life. How was he going to know when it was going to occur? How was he going to know how it related to our world today? He said the only way he could really tell a time of an event was if he, in this vision, he could see a portion of the sky. If he could make out constellations and star placements by seeing a portion of the sky, then he might be able to come up with some kind of a date. That's the only way he could do it. And you can see why, because even psychics today, they'll see a scene, they try to warn people, but how do they know when it is going to happen? Unless there is something in the scene to tell them roughly when it will be. So some of the dating in the book is not correct, but the event has definitely been happening. So you shouldn't pay too much attention to the dates. All we know is that right now we are living in what he called the time of trouble. This right now is the time of trouble. And we have to move through the time of trouble, through all these wars and all the awful events he saw, before we can move into the time of the great genius. The time of the great genius will be totally opposite and totally wonderful. Because he said the pendulum cannot swing all the way to the very evil, the bad, and stay there. It must swing back to balance. And when it swings back, it will come into the time of the great genius. And during the time of the great genius, we will be living in space, have space stations, traveling in space. The great genius will be a miraculous inventor who will invent many wondrous things for the world. Very good, powerful things. And we will go into the 1,000 years of peace. We will be traveling in space, living in space. There will be a source of power that will be non-polluting, and it will be placed on a space station, and it will be beamed down at the entire Earth, and it will be free. The free energy that will power the entire Earth and will not be polluted. This is one of the things he saw. He also saw the human body being perfected to the point that it would never die. That science would have reached the point where they could duplicate organs and parts of the body to where, and we are on the threshold of that right now, but he would get to that point to where the human body would never die. And well, that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. Some of my lectures have been debated back and forth, who's to say. But science is on that threshold right now. And when we were doing this in the late 80s, I didn't know anything about the inventions they're coming up with now, especially when they're moving into nanotechnology. And nanotechnology is going to be the science of the future, where they will be able to duplicate parts of the body by duplicating the DNA and having computers read this and reproduce organs and body parts that can be used for the person. We are on the threshold of something very exciting that's going to be happening. This is ushering in the thousand years of peace. It's also bringing in the new world that will be totally different as the world shifts its vibrations and moves into another dimension. Those are things I'll be talking about in the future that are out of the convoluted universe book series. But these were things he was telling us, if we can just get through this time right now. The Earth is a living being. And as a living being, it has karma. And it's trying to get rid of all the karma that it has right now before it moves into a totally new world. Like reincarnation, it's going to reincarnate into a totally beautiful new world. The person has to get rid of all the old karma as the countries work out their karma with it between themselves. And this is what's causing a lot of the wars and a lot of the natural disasters. But these are all things that he told us about, and a lot of them were not pleasant. I had to come to terms within my own self as to what I wanted to know. Do I really want to know these things? And it was very difficult, so I could come to terms within myself to say, it doesn't matter, this is something I have to work with. Because you could step off of the curb tomorrow and be hit by a car. That would be the end of your world as you know it. The people who were at Hiroshima didn't know what was going to happen to them either on that next day. They woke up and their entire world was taken away. But we never know from one day to the next what we're going to be, what we're going to be doing. All we can live in is the now and do the very best we can with our life now. So, that's what I found out. I was given this information for a reason. I would have to pass it on to the world and do the very best that I could. That's what I tried to do. But at that time, when Brenda got to where she couldn't work anymore, right before that time, Nostradamus had told me, you're going to need a drawer of horoscopes because we're getting into astrological dating. And he knew that neither I nor Brenda knew anything about astrology. So he said, don't worry, you will meet someone, you will find the person you need who will help you with the astrological dating. You will find your drawer of horoscopes, as he called it. So I couldn't figure out how in Arkansas we're going to meet somebody who would be able to help with this. You know, Arkansas is like the last place you're going to be able to find something like this. So, a few weeks after that, I was at a metaphysical meeting, and this young man came in. And nobody knew him. It was his first time to come to the meeting. And he said, I don't have any idea why I'm here, but I feel there's something, there's a reason for it. And then he found out what I was working on. And he was a professional astrologer, and he also had always been interested in Nostradamus. His name was John, and he wanted to be involved in what I was doing. So he began coming in to the sessions I was having with Brenda, and sitting in on the sessions and asking astrological questions. And he became very involved with this. And a lot of the things he was working on dealt with the Antichrist, the third Antichrist, and his birth date, and there's all the information involved with that. And also he was working on the events leading up to the shift of the world with all of the earth changes. So we were doing a lot of work with John that was very valuable, and then Brenda decided she couldn't work anymore because she just had to quit work and do this job with the chicken factories, and it was just too much for her. So I went to John and told him, we're just not going to be able to do this anymore because she can't work. And I can't make anybody do something they don't want to. That's not the way I work. So John said, put me under. see if I can contact Nostradamus and work with him one-on-one as an astrologer. And I said, yeah, I've done the impossible twice. Now you want me to do it three times? And he said, well, it would do any harm to try. So I used the same method that Nostradamus had told me when I first contacted him through Brenda, and it worked. And John was able to locate him, again, in the same room. And in this case, he was able to walk around the room with Nostradamus, and he saw himself as like glowing energy spirit, and communicated with him. Nostradamus would pull charts off of the shelves, lay them out so that he could look at them, and he gave him the interpretations and the dating the things that he needed. It was very powerful information. And John's story is told in volume 2 of the Conversations with Nostradamus. And I said last time, there's one amazing thing about this whole journey where we were working with Nostradamus. Through all the people, in volume 3 where we went through 12 people all together, through all these people, Nostradamus always said, when we are communicating, you are not speaking to the dead. And that spirit floating around out here somewhere. I am alive, living in my house in France, writing the prophecy. He also knew that I was not dead, but he was communicating with a living person in the future. He was so emphatic about this, he didn't want to know his own future. He didn't want to tell me to tell him when he was going to die. He wanted this to be just an experiment that he didn't want to get involved with it that much. So, if that's true, that when we are communicating, and we are communicating with him when he is alive, that brings up the metaphysical theory of simultaneous time, that there is no time. Everything is all occurring at the same time, with different frequencies, different dimensions. So we're able to contact him while he's alive and to work this whole thing out. At that time, people began saying, explain simultaneous time to me. I didn't know. All I knew was this was the explanation. Now in my Convoluted Universe books, I've gone further and have been able to understand it better, hopefully. I have tried to present it to people anyway. But it's an interesting concept that we are not speaking to a dead spirit. It's not channeling. It was direct time travel, communicating with him while he was alive so he could give me the information. Another interesting point I want to bring out, dealt with John, is that we found in his past life, just before the life he was in now, he was alive in Germany. It was during Hitler's Germany. And during the war, Hitler tried to use as many psychics, astrologers that he could to his advantage. A lot of people don't know this, but there was a psychic war also going on, and he used a lot of psychics and astrologers to conduct this psychic war. When I was in England, I've gone several times to Burley in the south of England, a little town that is called the Home of the Witches, and it is the home especially of the White Witches. Sybil Leek was the leader, and she's dead now, but she used to live there. And they tell that during the war, they were using their combined powers to try to counteract the psychic attacks that were being done by Hitler with his psychics and his astrologers. Now, it was also known that during the Second World War, Hitler took the Nostradamus quatrain and had this changed to reflect the fact that Germany was going to win the war. He wanted people to believe this. And they actually made leaflets and dropped them all over parts of Europe, telling people we are winning the war. He had radio broadcasts trying to tell people by using the prophecy, here, see here what it says, we are the master race, we are going to win the war. Well, John went back to his last lifetime He was in Hitler's Germany, and he was part of all of that. He was an astrologer then. And he said, that explains why it was so easy for me this time, he said, because he had just been an astrologer. And he was part of the propaganda group that Hitler was using to do this. And one of his jobs in that other life was to help with the changing of the prophecy for propaganda purposes. So you see the karma involved here. He had incurred karma by helping the second Antichrist, Hitler, by changing and adulterating the prophecy. So he had to come back in this lifetime and help with the defeat of the third Antichrist by making the prophecies more accurate. That's amazing. That was the karma that he had to do to bring back now into this life. And I almost did meet him, but they say nothing is coincidence. I was meant to meet him. He was meant to come into my life. But what if we hadn't got together, then none of this would have happened. But it was too big, it seems like this was his karma, to repay the debt from the past life. Because after I finished working with John, through John, we did about 250 quatrains in 6 weeks that were mostly meeting once a week, that were mostly astrological. And then he moved away to Florida. I kept in contact with him. I would send him copies of the manuscript because I wanted him to look at it, make sure everything was accurate on the astrological part. But then he said it doesn't matter anymore. He said, I said, why? He said, because I'm dying. And he ended up being put into a nursing home, and he died at the age of 36 of AIDS. And I dedicated the second volume to him. And when I sent him the manuscript and I sent him the dedication, his sister said he had it taped, the dedication taped on the wall next to his bed in the nursing home. He said this was the proudest thing he had ever done to be associated with this project, upbringing the correct translations to our time. So he died at the age of 36 from AIDS. So this was very important that he come into my life to put this all together. And it's a very strange story. But through John, we were actually interacting in Nostradamus' life. We were there in his life when he was living, because there were some times we were talking to Nostradamus, and he would say, I've got to go now. My wife is knocking at the door. She has the lamb stew ready, and she's very aggravated at me because I spent too much time in here. I have to go and eat. And we said, well, can't we just wait till you come back because we have a lot of time left? And he said, no, because when I leave to go eat, the maid will come in to clean the room, and she will see you as ghosts. And she doesn't need that in her life. So it was actually interacting in his life. And there was another chapter in the book, the second volume, where while we were in the room communicating with him, Nostradamus had a heart attack. And John was frantic, trying to say, what do I do now? He said, I'm not allowed to touch anyone in another century. But how do I get help for him, because he was turning blue and he was having a heart attack at his desk. And he noticed there was a bell on the wall that Nostradamus had put up in case he needed help. And he was trying to ring the bell to get help, and his hand kept going through the bell because he was not solid. But he was able to finally move the clapper enough to get the bell to ring, and then people came running into the room, saw what was happening, and were able to help Nostradamus. So we were really participating in his life. We were interacting with him while he was alive, living in that time period. It's quite an amazing story that people would not believe if they hadn't been there. And here I am running out of time again. I think this is quite a story, and it takes more than a few strokes to tell it all. I have done lectures where I've spoken for days just on the Nostradamus material, and I've done several-day seminars. Then we go into the prophecies and what is predicted. There is a lot of information, and it's the most amazing and disturbing to find it coming true. But I realize now we have to work our way through the Earth's karma before we can go into the time of the great genius and the thousand years of peace, the shifting into the new world. But these were all very important people. It helped me with this story. It helped me put it all together. With actual time travel, going through time, and being there with him while he was alive, and living and interpreting his prophecy. Okay, and I'm going to have to go in a few minutes because they always want us to stop at 5 minutes till, and they'll shut me off if I go 1 minute over. I will have guests the next 2 weeks. But after that, if there's another time when I don't have a guest, I can continue and talk about some of the prophecies that have come true and some of the ones that are expected to see. Because after John, I decided to do the work with all of the best subjects that I had, and we were able to complete the translation interpretation of all 1,000. So we have a very good cross-section of what is expected from the world if we don't do something to stop it. That's the thing. We have to focus on peace and harmony to keep the worst of what he saw from happening. Because believe me, you don't want the worst to happen that he saw. It's just too terrible. We have to shut it down. We can't allow that to happen. We have to save the world. All right, I'm going to have to sign off now. Earlier in the show, I gave my 800 numbers, and I gave my website, and also my email. So if anybody wants to check and see where I'll be speaking, it's on the schedules on my website. If anybody wants to know about a private session with me, or to know about any of the classes I'll be giving in the future, please contact us on the 800 number, are on the website or the email. All right, so I'm signing off now, and until next week, goodbye.